Welcome everybody to Productivity Book Group. I am your host and facilitator, Ray Sidney Smith. Thanks for joining us here on the live call or on the podcast for Productivity Book Group. And on this call, we will be discussing The Joy of Less, a minimalist guide, how to declutter, organize, and simplify your life by Francine Jay. I'm using the Amazon book description here, which it states, having less stuff is the key to happiness. Do you ever feel overwhelmed instead of overjoyed by all of your possessions? Do you secretly wish a gale force wind would blow the clutter from your home? If so, it's time to simplify your life. The Joy of Less is a fun, lighthearted guide to minimalist living. Part 1 provides an inspirational pep talk on the joys and rewards of paring down. Part 2 presents the Streamline Method. It's a 10-step method to rid your house of clutter. Part 3 goes room by room, outlining specific ways to tackle each one. And then Part 4 helps you trim your to-do list, free up your time, and explains how saving space in your closets can save the planet. Francine Jay started blogging about minimalist blogging, minimalist living in 2009, and has published over has actually sold over 100,000 copies of her three books, which are Fragillionaire, The Joy of Less, and Miss Minimalist, which is her latest book, I think published in 2011. Francine herself is a minimalist and describes, quote, being a minimalist isn't only about white walls and empty spaces. It's about eliminating the distractions that keep us from fully appreciating life, end quote, on her website, missminimalist.com. So as always, I'd like to just start off with everyone's initial sort of general reaction to this book, and we could talk about, you know, what you sort of felt like from your initial impressions from reading the book. So let's get right started. How did you feel about The Joy of Less?
I enjoyed it. I took a break in the middle for a bit, and I guess when I hit the part about the room by room, and then picked it back up again a week later, and I actually did do a few. You know, I even made a little list of things I did because or while I was reading the book. So overall, I liked it. I thought a couple times, I thought when she was talking about checkbooks, I'm like, when was this written? You know, the checkbook is the closest thing you need at hand, at your, you know, near circle storage. And a couple times I thought it got a little bit preachy, like not just like, I'm going to help you get rid of some stuff, but I felt like I was back in junior high and high school at Christian school, you know, at chapel twice a week, being told, like, why consumerism was bad and, you know, how a bottle of makeup was not going to bring me happiness and stuff like that. But, you know, overall, I liked it.
Glad to hear, Bonnie. And so, Denise, you had a raised hand. What were your impressions, Denise?
I liked it. I've gotten through to the streamlines, but I haven't gone room to room yet. But I think part of what I liked was that she gave you permission to keep or collect the things that you want to collect. But, you know, you don't have to collect 50 million things. But if you want to keep collection A, keep it. But, you know, get rid of all the other junk. And so that didn't feel so like I was, you know, getting rid of everything. You know, I like my collection. So I thought it just kind of helped to focus on, you know, what you really want, what you really find is beautiful, keep those things, but the rest of the stuff, you know, get rid of it.
Absolutely.
I like that notion of curating the things or curating your collection.
Yeah, and appreciating the space.
This bit from the book I really like. The idea is not to decide which things to get rid of, but to choose the things we'll keep.
Yeah, I highlighted that as well.
I can imagine, I haven't done the bathroom yet, but I can imagine dumping, you know, a drawer out and then saying, which of these things do I really want? Instead of, you know, normally I would look through there and think, which can I stand to get rid of? You know, which haven't I used? Like reversing how you think about it. I think that will help me.
Yeah, that's really important to sort of look at it from both lenses. You know, what do I want to keep and sort of like getting that sort of as a first response, as opposed to, you know, these things that may or may not be useful to you anymore, and you just, you know, keep doting on the one or two items that have least value, as opposed to which items have the most value to you. Yeah, I thought the book was was readable. I felt like she had a nice conversational style that I didn't feel it was too preachy to me. I mean, probably because I glazed over that tone, and I tend to do that, and I don't particularly get too wrapped up in people's if they're too strong, I guess it probably irks me, but otherwise didn't. And I felt like the philosophy side of the book, sort of part one of the book, which is sort of her whole philosophy and the sort of question perspective of potential purchases. I don't particularly have that concern when I'm making purchases because I probably come at this as a minimalist to begin with, so those things are very much a part of me to begin with, and so I really didn't feel like that added very much to my own system. But I think it's really good for someone who it may or may not have that as a part of their system. Like questions like does this deserve a place in my home? Will it actually make me more productive? In essence, that's what she's saying. I tend to use the word fulfilled, and like, will this be fulfilling? Will this purchase be fulfilling for me? And I found I always find those things to be very useful in being able to make decision purchases. Of course, I'm much more of an analytical, so I research purchases not ad nauseum,
exhaustively.
Yeah, exactly. So very few things actually make their way in the front door because it's still in the state of being researched, and that's okay for me, because it keeps things to a minimum in my own life. And I'm actually curious about folks who have read other books about minimalism, maybe Greg McCowan's book on minimalism that he called Essentialism, and there are lots of other books about decluttering and organizing spaces in your home. Probably the most popular is the book by Regina Leeds, which is A Year to an Organized Life, and her companion book, A Year to an Organized Work Life. Has anyone read any other of those books and had any sort of thoughts in terms of comparison?
Well, since sort of in line together with this read, I also checked out of the library The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, The Japanese Art of Decluttering and Organizing, Marie Kondo. And so I've read like the first fourth of that. That's sort of, and also what's interesting is I figured she was Asian American, like her grandparents moved here from Japan. She's actually Japanese. This was translated from Japanese, so that's sort of interesting, I think.
Yeah, Marie Kondo is basically like the Zen organizer, the Regina Leeds of Japan, and she's very popular there. I mean, she's a rock star in the professional organizing world, and so I like the idea of the sparking joy, that things should spark joy or not.
She says, and put all your things out, like all your socks or all the pens in the house, pick them up one by one and see how each one feels to you. If it feels
have you
good
done that
and it sparks something, then keep it.
Yeah. Have you done that with any items?
No, I only just started reading it a couple days ago.
Oh, okay.
But there was another book I read a few years back that I did really like, which I might sneak off to the bookshelf and get in case anyone is interested.
Yeah, we're always interested in new books. So back to The Joy of Less. I mean, from my perspective, I did want to touch base on the fact that like Essentialism, which is probably my sort of go-to book when it comes to minimalist living, I felt like the contrast for those who are listening is like, The Joy of Less is much more a practical guide, and I think a lot of people made the comment like, oh my gosh, the room by room, instructions became repetitive and sort of, whatever. And I actually disagree fully. I think that it was really important for me to have that, just like Regina Leeds' book, it's like, no, I think it's really important for you to be able to go to that section when you're ready to do it and not have to worry about rereading the entire book or having to remember, you know, X or Y section. She literally takes you room by room, and you can do it at any given time and not feel, you know, disconnected from the material. You know, I felt like Essentialism is probably a better theoretical book. It gives you a framework within which to see minimalist living and looking at essentialism as a way of life. I feel like The Joy of Less is a much more practical guide that if you wanted to and need to implement, you know, decluttering and minimalism, you can do that. And you can do that with any room. You know, so it's like if your kitchen's, you know, a small space and is not cluttered, or not even cluttered, but just not organized in the way in which you want it to be, and is organized in the way you want it to be, you just don't have to read that room. You know, you can just tackle the particular rooms that you need that for. And so I really appreciated that third room by room section of the book, because it was like, okay, I'm going to pick out these rooms and those are the ones I'm going to tackle. Did anyone else feel that way, feel differently? I'm happy to hear thoughts.
Denise, did you say you didn't read the third section yet, the rooms part?
No, I picked up the book late, so I'm just getting to that. It sounds like a good premise, because there are probably particular issues that we all have in a particular room. You know, mine's my craft room, so I'm sure that there will be things in there that will be helpful for me. and the idea early on about pulling everything out of the room and then only putting back what you need was kind of an eye-opener or a game-changer. It makes you think about things a whole lot differently.
I missed this when I was first reading the rooms by room. I was two-thirds through that section before I realized that she was structuring it, the chapters with the Streamline acronym, the start over, trash, treasure transfer, reason for each item. And maybe because I had, you know, not read it the week before, I didn't realize that. And once I did realize that she was going through each room with her own acronym system, it sort of, I thought, oh, that's really cool, you know, to help bring everything together. And I wonder, Ray, if some of the people, you know, who thought it was repetitive, maybe they didn't notice that, because I felt better once I realized she was, you know, putting her own little framework in each room. That made me connect with the book more.
That's very interesting insight, and I would wonder, those who will probably listen to this podcast are probably some of those people, and so if you do, you should email me and let me know, because I think that's important for people to know that she is using the Streamline method, and going back to your thought, Denise, I think it's really important for people to recognize that the idea for her is for you to actually empty the space. You know, like if you're going to, organize a drawer, you know, you're gonna take everything out of the drawer and only put back into it those things that, you know, represent high value to you, functional value to you. And I think that's really the power of the methodology in general for me. So absolutely. Yeah, Bonnie, I don't know if folks didn't know that she was following the 10-step process, Streamline, but I knew that going into each of the rooms, which is why I, at least in my initial read, I read all of the room sections, but then my second, you know, read through, I really didn't, you know, I picked the exact rooms that I wanted to tackle at that time, and I didn't reread, you know, each individual room. And but I think that the good part for anyone approaching this is that if you know the Streamline method, concept, and any time, you know, like I'm going to be moving again soon, and when I do move, I'm going to want to, look at each of those rooms with the method in mind, you know, so that, you know, I might move everything, but then by the time I have the things in the room, I'm not gonna take out of the box those things that are not things that I don't want to go into the new place, you know? So that's really important for people to sort of like utilize them at every aspect, every transition in life, you know, when you have that opportunity to be able to use that to minimalize, I guess is the right word, with those things. And
I have when you said,
No, go ahead.
When you said that about moving and the boxes, I was reminded, I have this horror of renting storage rooms. You know, you see them, people going into them and on TV and in movies, and it's like, how long has that stuff been there? And a friend of mine in Los Angeles, she moved to L.A. 9 years ago, and she since has gotten married, but she still has a storeroom, in a storage unit in Washington, D.C. with stuff in it. I'm like, you pay for that every month. And like, it just seems so horrible to me that when we moved from the West Coast to the East Coast, I said, you know, I don't care if we give stuff away. I'm not putting anything in storage.
Well, kudos to you. I mean, I did have a very large storage unit for quite some years, and just because everything couldn't fit in my primary home, and it was a very utilized space. It was like a garage that I used quite frequently. Actually, it set up my entire library inside of the four walls of the storage unit. So I kid you not, I literally had all four walls covered in books, and then in the center I had set up all of the other pallets with all the other boxes, because I didn't want them, you know, I didn't want boxes on the ground in the space just in case there was flooding. Yes, I'm that anal retentive, and so I so I had built this sort of like walking hallway between the two sets of boxes. The walls had been lined in books and so on and so forth. But if it's not highly utilized, I think like that, it just becomes another junk drawer, you know, in essence, and you don't want to be in that kind of space. And I was lucky enough that my storage unit was on the second floor of my, you know, of the building I lived in. So, you know, it was like another room in my home.
Oh, you don't mean it was off in a warehouse elsewhere. It was near.
No. Yeah,
this was
like a, I don't know what they called it, it was like a mezzanine floor, which is where I entered into this particular storage room. And so, yeah, I just took the elevator down to my mezzanine level, and I was able to walk in, and it was like, you know, having my library on a different floor. I actually thought about at some point, like, opening it up to the rest of the building
and
saying, yeah, and say, hey, everybody, you know, I have all of these books. As long as you return them, you know, but it never really happened that way, because I didn't know how I would be able to control access. And I'm sure that the building wouldn't have liked me having my storage unit open for liability purposes. So I ended up not doing it. But I thought it would be really cool to do so. And I think you're right, though, Bonnie. Most people who have storage units and just leave them without thought, I think that's a real trouble, and I think that probably takes up some level of psychic, energy, you know, every time they pay it every month. I don't know if they notice it. Maybe they don't even notice it. I would imagine it's enough money that you would notice it. It's not like it's free. I do know that the really interesting story. A professional organizer I know who's based out of Washington, D.C., Beth Hutchison, she became a professional organizer because her mother passed away, and her mother had, you know, just an enormous amount of stuff that she then packed up, and I don't remember the exact story, but she sort of packed it up and put it in a storage unit, you know, so it went from a storage unit, I think, in Florida to a storage unit in the Washington, D.C. area. She moved all of that stuff up to her region, and then it just sort of sat there for 2 years, and then she eventually moved all of that stuff into her own home, and like literally like filled her own home with all of the stuff from her mother, and eventually sort of purged it all. And
she became a professional organizer.
She did, exactly. Yeah, it's a very interesting story. She actually, I probably have a link to it, to a recorded presentation she gave to the Getting Things Done DC meetup group. I'll put that in the show notes. But really, really fascinating, you know, just to know how people deal with not just their own stuff, but the stuff that they inherit, and things that people give them over time, and how storage units can somewhat be enabling to clutter because you put things in places that you don't have to see every day, so it becomes out of sight, out of mind. But in essence, it really could be quite dastardly. So I wanted to shift gears a little bit to the streamline method itself. So this is the sort of 10-step process that Francine has developed for being able to deal with things. And so I'm just going to quickly go over the 10 steps, and then I want you all to tell me your thoughts about the various items. And I'm actually taking the summary that I posted in the Google Plus page for this event. I'm using the items here from the moneycrashers.com website, so appropriate credit to the moneycrashers.com folks. And so here she has the streamline method that Francine created. It's start over, that's the S, start over, basically take everything out of the space. Two is to trash, treasure, or transfer. Sort everything according to what you're going to do with it. You know, put everything that's trash or recycle in one space, keep it in one space, and give it away or sell it in another space. The third step, the R, which is reason for each item, you're going to go ahead and do a sort of analysis and synthesis of each item's reason for being in your space. And that means removing redundancies and asking yourself its functionality and its frequency of use. Then E, for everything in its place, when you look at items you are keeping, decide how often you use them, then assign each item a place in the inner circle, basically close to where you use it. The outer circle, places that are a little bit further out of reach, and then deep storage, places in another room or in garage or something like that. And then finally return everything to its assigned place when you're finished using it. A goes for all surfaces clear. Horizontal surfaces are not for storage and should remain clear. M is for modules. And here the blog author wrote, your household should be organized into modules, which requires putting items used for a single purpose together in one spot. For example, all things related to bill paying should be organized into one module. Your checkbook, there it goes again, Bonnie, that checkbook. incoming bills, stamps, and pens. The L goes for limits, which is the sixth step. The seventh step. It's the sixth step. Limits, set limits, space limits for your stuff. So all of your books must fit into one bookcase, for example. Mine would never do that. The I goes for if one comes in, one goes out. And so you should, stop the flow of stuff into your home by basically, for everyone that you bring in, you get rid of one or donate it or something like that. N, which is the ninth step, is narrow it down. The next step is to narrow down what remains in your home to that which you really need. You can miniaturize things, use electronic storage instead of paper, so going paperless in some way, shape, or form. And then the tenth step, which is every day. You can't purge and think you're done, otherwise you'll be back in the same spot where you started before you know it. You must be vigilant every day about what enters your home to make sure you are not suffocating again in a few months or years. Okay, so that's the streamline method that she proposes. And I want us to talk about your experiences or your general thoughts about the method as a whole. So I know we have some folks on the line who have dialed in since and some other folks who have not read the book but have read the summary, and I would be more than happy to hear your thoughts as well about, what you think about the streamline method, about implementing it, or even, if you have used the method, perhaps how you might have experienced using it and what you thought about it.
I'll start because mine is short. My favorite one is A, all surfaces clear, because I've been muttering that to myself when I go into a room, and I have cleared all the surfaces of the living room, and now I'm trying to keep it that way.
That's
awesome.
Great. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I do not have an all surfaces clear at the moment, but I would really like to.
And that's one I struggle with as well. I find certain things, like, I can get my closets really organized, but all this stuff waiting to be decided upon tends to gather on the surfaces. So that's one I'm really looking forward to experiencing.
Yeah, and in that same vein, Denise, I have that problem of even if it's not even necessarily out of sight, out of mind for me, because as a GTDer, I have it anchored in my next actions list, you know, whether it's an errands list, if I have to return a product to a store, you know, like a piece of clothing that doesn't fit me, or if I have something else that's like it's broken and I need to take it for repair. Those things, if they're out of sight, they're usually, that means they're usually like out of reach for it being conveniently accessible when I need it to be. And then I'll frequently like, where did I put that, you know? And so, I, you know, like if I come across my list, I want it visibly accessible for me to be able to take and go, you know, and like having to deviate from it sitting by the door, for instance, becomes an issue. But that also becomes an issue for me because I'm like, you know, like I don't need 30 things sitting in front of my doorway, you know, that are various things that need, you know. So I'm constantly like navigating, okay, these are all things that need to be done. They need to be done in different time frames. And so it's like, you know, what things go away versus what things stay in my space. And as far as like, in terms of like my desktop, you know, my desk space, I like to put everything away at the end of the day, except the things that I want to work on in the subsequent day. But I also feel like,
because it's a trigger.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But, but I also find that like, I have them all out and readily accessible, but they also take up a little bit of psychic space when I'm trying to focus. And so I'm actually now, like, I'll clean up at the end of the day. I'll have all of my stuff prepared for the following day, but then I'll actually take that and put that in its own, like, sort of container. Like this, I have, like, a little side table, but I, like, set it off to the side on the side table as, like, that's ready. That's all project support material for the following day. But the desk surface itself needs to be clear, you know. So it's like it's in my 180 degrees of peripheral vision, but it's not on my desk, so that I could come to the desk and just see everything clear. And then if I need it, I can then turn myself to that material and bring it to focus. And I don't know if anyone else has any other experiences or feelings about that.
I had worked with a professional organizer a while back, and one of her points was that if you have a place where things are piling up, that's not the issue. The issue is the downstream where it should be going. There's a problem there, and that's why it's not going to its home. So her suggestion was to fix whatever is on the final receiving end so that your things don't, you know, if everything gets piled on the edge of the kitchen counter, you know, find why it's not going to your desk or to other places. That was one thing that kind of helped me to try and keep surfaces clear.
Analyze what's downstream, obstacles downstream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like one thing that I always do is anything that's going to be an attachment for a final product, I immediately scan and attach to like a draft email or whatever, you know, like putting it into my cloud storage so it's easily available to attach later, because I'll find that like that little, while it's a very good habit for me, like on the front end for me to scan things, when I'm trying to like get a project out the door, like, okay, I need to, you know, finish writing this document, attach this, you know, signed authorization for X, Y, and Z, get the proposal, you know, together, that's when I really get frustrated and I'm like, oh, now I have to scan this. Now I have to go put that together. You know, that's when I feel the most friction to getting a project done. So by scanning everything on the front end when I'm like, this is fun, you know, like for some reason that's like, you know, I don't know why, but it is. It's like, you know, like scanning things and like throwing it into my my desktop scanner and like getting those things done, that's really fun for me. It's when I'm in the pressure of the moment to get things out the door that it's really helpful that I know that stuff is already scanned and all I have to do is attach it. So I guess that's sort of the idea, Denise, is that like, you know, some of those downstream issues can be mitigated if you think about where they're going to end up.
This is Lee.
Hey, Lee, how's it going?
Good. Got done early. David Allen actually talks about stuff piling up in your inbox in GTD as being typically a symptom of downstream processes being broken. It gets there, you collect it, but then you don't know what to do with it, or you don't have, in essence, although it's a process thing, you don't have a place for it to go, which is exactly what was just described a minute ago, of it piles up somewhere because you don't have the place to go put it in its place.
Absolutely.
I know for me, things to read can pile up in different forms. Could be magazines, could be newspapers, could be articles in my pocket list. And so I'd been thinking the last couple months, maybe I should somehow, you know, even though I love to read, maybe somehow assign myself, you know, make a routine of reading particular things. And then just recently, Mike Vardy, the productivityist, he's been talking about that same thing, and he said he's created a reading workflow, and he's got a podcast about an article, which I'm going to read. So that's one way I'm trying to do what Denise just said, analyze what's downstream and make it flow through better so it doesn't pile up.
Fantastic. If you could send me that article and podcast link for Mike's material, that would be great. I'll add it to the show notes. And, I sometimes struggled with the reading situation and that becoming an issue of clutter. And so what I've done is, one, you know, I've scanned everything, you know, like, so I read the Washington Business Journal and several other in paper form, you know, documents. Even though I do get the Washington Business Journal emailed to me in a PDF, I just feel like it's not the most absorbable format for me for that material. I don't know why, it's just what it is. So I get it delivered and I read it, and then I, you know, immediately, you know, I capture it into Evernote and go for it. And what I've found is that, like with Pocket, you know, which is my Read Later app, and I think that's what you mentioned, Bonnie, I like to tag things as like must reads, the time frame. So like this is a 5-minute read, this is a 2-minute read, this is more than 10 minutes. So like basically the 10-minute tag, which is like 10MIN, that 10-minute means that it's going to take me more than 10 minutes to read whatever it is. And that's usually like a, you know, a very long document, like a PDF that's like a report or something like that. And so like things get tagged with one of the time frames and then the must read. So those items that are must read, I'll always make sure that I read. Everything that's not a must read, then it gets archived at the end of the week if I haven't read it. Like it's just like, you know, goodbye, you know,
week you clear it out.
Yeah, exactly. Because otherwise I'd have thousands of articles in there that are unprocessed. However, you know, like I tag everything. So like, you know, something I would tag as productivity, or another thing I would tag as social media. Since I'm a web and mobile strategist, you know, I teach people how to use web and mobile technologies. You know, that's of interest to me. But I don't need to read every article that I pocket for it later. So I just, you know, I add it there. I tag it as that. And then, you know, if it's something that I want to do research for, an upcoming presentation or an upcoming workshop, I can just quickly search against that tag and voila, they all pop up. And now it's sort of like, it's mini research, you know, sort of becomes a mini research hub, but I have no friction or static or overwhelm that I didn't read it before because I'm going to get to it later. It's just it's sort of a pre-filter as opposed to me having to go to Google and start from scratch. So I sort of like that, you know, weekly purge. Yeah, sure, I didn't read, you know, these articles, but they just weren't important enough. And I read enough in my
Feedly there for later in case you do need them.
Exactly, exactly. And in my case, you know, the Pocket ability to archive, if you have the premium edition, you know, you're able to archive the article so that even if it's deleted, it's not gone. So it gives you a lot more, you know, capabilities from there. And I like to then, if I'm going to use that article, if I know I'm going to use that article in something else, then that's when it moves from Pocket to Evernote and becomes part of my, you know, my real archive, which is Evernote. And so it's like, oh, I'm going to use this in that particular project, and I'm going to put that in that specific notebook and make sure that it ends up there. And so I think that that's always helpful for people to sort of hear how others handle the reading clutter issue, which is, you know, immediately digitize everything that you possibly can. So if I find an article in a print magazine, I always try to look for the digital version of it. You know, most often than not, it's there. And even to the extent of like Harvard Business Review, you know, where, you know, I could find any number of articles in, you know, library readings or stuff like that, and it's like $1 or, you know, $10 or whatever it is to buy the article online. And then, you know, it's like, fine, that's so much better than me trying to hunt and peck and have a pile of paper sitting around forever. So I always try to like just, you know, capture it, scan it with my phone, or find the digital version of it and then just, you know, sort of import the PDF into my archive. How do others deal with sort of the paper reading clutter issue, and preferably maybe with the streamline method in mind?
David, I just Mark, decided I Mac Power users. He, sorry, go ahead.
Was that you, Lee?
Yeah, I was gonna say I have no method. I have piles in Pocket, in Todoist, and in Goodreads. So I like your method. I haven't quite figured out how I'll apply it to all that. So I'm adopting some version of what you just described.
Yeah, and it's really important to remember that you can't process everything that you currently have in a pile of stuff. I know that, you know, David Allen promotes the idea of, you know, just sort of like dedicating a weekend to processing all of the stuff in your life. And sometimes that doesn't work. So if it doesn't work, then I think that the next best thing is to schedule regular time to process the backlog. It's just really important that going forward, you start with the method that works best for you, knowing that you can make it sustainable. So, you know, practicing is actually on the backlog and on the forward moving stuff. So going forward, you're going to use this methodology, and then you're going to inchworm your way through the backlog, because you didn't create that backlog overnight. You know, you didn't overnight have a pile of stuff. So it's really important for you to sort of take a step back and say, yes, I'm going to have a pile of stuff for some time, but little by little, I'm going to take away that oldest stuff. And I actually use my friend's methodology for this, where she takes today to yesterday and then the oldest day's worth of stuff. So basically, you're working on two ends of things, and you're cleaning up yesterday just in case you missed it, today, and the oldest day's worth of stuff. So in essence, you know, you get the opportunity to really clean up on both ends bit by bit.
Yeah, and the other piece of that is, I don't stress over this, so I don't have any problem at all just sort of turning the pile into a separate thing and simply abandoning it for the day-to-day to start the current method. So that's a great thing, so thanks for sharing it.
Absolutely, Lee. So, Bonnie, going back to what you started saying.
Oh, what Denise said about analyzing the downstream made me think of this. I'm not sure what from Streamline it is. Maybe everyday maintenance, and I'm not sure. But he has one document scanner on his desk and another one right at the door where they bring the mail in, and the one by the door is wireless. So he stands and processes his mail, opens the mail there, either recycles it or sends it to the shredder or scans it immediately, like before it even gets into the main house.
Mm, yeah, that wouldn't work in my home, but I definitely like the idea. You know, it's funny because several years ago I started using, I forget what it was called, was it Earthmail or something like that? And what they did was they, basically have you changed all of your addresses for mailing purposes. They all go to this, you know, new address, and you forward your mail gets basically forwarded to them. They scan it, and you get the digital version. And I used that for several years, and it was very helpful. And so, you know, at that point, you know, I just started unsubscribing and forcing these people to just stop sending me mail. And I've gotten to the point where I get such minimal mail. I don't, you know, I just like, I've turned off pretty much all of the various services. So they're all digitized. And for the most part, you know, they come in digital, and then I filter it so that the PDFs of, you know, bank documents automatically get, you know, the PDFs of them get automatically pulled into my financial folders. So, you know, I don't really think about mail in the same way I normally do. And then the infrequent times I do receive mail, it's sort of nice. It's actually a treat that I just got a wedding invitation from my cousin, and, you know, it was like, oh wow, mail. I forgot I got those. And so, you know, that immediately goes into my GTD tickler file. It's filed and ready for me to look at when I'm ready to deal with, you know, RSVPing and looking at the gift registry and the wedding registry and so on and so forth. So, you know, it actually, you know, if you can utilize the current state of technology, there's lots that you can do where you don't even have to deal with it. You know, I mean, there are a lot of services like that. You know, what's the service where you can like, what is it called? I used to use it. You take all the stuff and you put it in an envelope and you ship it off to them. And they scan it all for you and
Shoebox. Something like that.
Yes, Shoebox. Yes, thank you. And I will add that to the show notes. Yeah, but Shoebox is a great service for that kind of stuff too. And now they have all of these shredding days, like my Federal Credit Union. The credit union I'm with, they have a sort of like every, you know, pretty much every season they have a shredding day. So I actually don't shred anything anymore. I just put it into a shredding bin, and then on that day I take it to the, you know, shredding day, and they shred it all. And I mean, that's a huge cost savings for me because I don't have to buy another shredder. I don't have to worry about the you have to buy the shredding oil to keep the teeth of the shredder clean, the electricity, all of that stuff is now a moot, cost for me because I could just get it all done in one fell swoop. Now, that also means that there's a shredding bin taking space in my home and office, but, you know, it just depends on how much space you have and how much you really want to be involved. I like the scanning side. I don't like the shredding side. So it becomes what you like.
This is Lee. So this one is not good for apartment dwellers, but if you have a house with decent space, we actually have one of the giant blue shred bins from a commercial company, and so we just pile it up for months, and then they come and take it away and give us a new bin, and you get charged a relatively nominal fee. But since we both work from home and have confidential material for work as well as all the personal stuff, it's a lot of paper, and it's way cheaper and huge amounts of time saving not to have to shred all that stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, and what I love about it is that, like, go ahead, Lee.
Those services are available in just about any town.
Yeah, what I love about, you know, what I'm doing is that, you know, I literally see the stuff getting shredded, you know, so it's like I don't have to worry about, you know,
they're sending it off to Thailand or something.
right, exactly. Not that what Lee is talking about is all that, you know, insecure, but I like just seeing it being done, you know, because it's like I didn't have to do that. Look at that, you know.
Well, we're talking
sort of entertaining.
We're talking commercial services that do doctor's offices and things, and you get a certificate. And if you pick your company, typically they're small family owned type businesses, so. It's